Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, First Canto, Chapter 19, Text 37. Uttaha prichchami samsiddhim. Uttaha prichchami samsiddhim. Yoginam paramam gurum. Yoginam paramam gurum. Purusha yeha yat karyam. Purusha yeha yat karyam. Mriyamana shisarvata. Mriyamana shisarvata. Taha prinshami samsiddhim. Yoginam paramam gurum. Purusha shyeha yat karyam. Mriyamana shisarvata. Others, please. Vaishnavis. Ataha, therefore, prichchami, beg to inquire, samsiddhim, the way of perfection, yoginam, of the saints, paramam, the supreme, gurum, the spiritual master, purusasya, of a person, iha, in this life, yat, whatever. Karyam, duty. Mriyamanasya, of one who is going to die. Sarvata, in every way. Translation. You are the spiritual master of great saints and devotees. I am therefore begging you to show the way of perfection for all persons, and especially for one who is about to die. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Unless one is perfectly anxious to inquire about the way of perfection, there is no necessity of approaching a spiritual master. A spiritual master is not a kind of decoration for a householder. Generally, a fashionable materialist engages a so-called spiritual master without any profit. The pseudo-spiritual master flatters the so-called disciple, and thereby both the master and his ward go to hell without a doubt. Marge Prickett is the right type of disciple because he puts forward questions vital to the interest of all men, particularly for the dying men. The question put forward by Maharaj Prickett is the basic principle of the complete thesis of Srimad Bhagavatam. Now let us see how intelligently the great master replies. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pastaya Bhutale Shrimati Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Tenamane Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pacharine Nirvishesha Sunyavadi Paschatade Shatarine. So Maharaj Prickett here is asking a question of Sukadev Goswami, and it's not like he doesn't know the answer. He knows the answer. He knows the answer to this question since he was a kid. It's described earlier in the Bhagavatam. We heard how Maharaj Prickett, even as a child, he was Krishna Krita. He was playing and, you know, enacting the pastimes of Krishna like that. So he knew. He knew the answer to this question. So why is he asking this question? Aside from the fact that it's a pastime and, you know, the Srimad Bhagavatam has to be spoken, that figures in there as well. But it's part of his humility, actually. Intelligence and humility. Actually, in a class that Mukunda Dutt gave back maybe a month ago, he quoted Sanatana Goswami as saying that humility is Krishna consciousness. So Maharaj Prickett here, he's very humble. He's very humble, and as part of the humility, he's asking this question. He understands, in his particular case, you know, he hasn't really approached, he didn't seek out Sukadeva Goswami, as Archita Prabhu pointed out very nicely in a class he gave, I think, or maybe a comment he made earlier last week, was that, you know, Maharaj Prickett just, he made that decision on his own. When he got the news that he was going to be leaving his body in 7 days, he was cursed, etc. So he made that decision on his own that he would go to the bank of the Yamuna and just fast and like that until death. And Sukadeva Goswami and other great personalities happened to, you know, appear on the, getting news of that, they appeared on the scene. But when Maharaj Prickett, when they all did, it wasn't like Maharaj Prickett. And he was the emperor, okay, and he was a great devotee from birth. And so it wasn't like he informed them of his program. You know, Maharaj Prickett's response to everybody, you know, Vyasadeva and Narada Muni and this one and that one and this one, we heard the names, like, you know, I can't remember them. All these great, great sages and personalities from all over the universe had arrived. And it wasn't, you know, like he just cordially greeted them and, okay, well, thank you for coming and this is what I've decided to do. And no, he didn't inform them of his decision. I mean, to a certain extent he did. I'm here, you know, to fast until death. But when Sukadeva Goswami came, you know, certainly when Sukadeva Goswami came, he didn't say just thanks for coming. You know, please make yourself comfortable and this is what we're going to do. No, he inquired. You know, he inquired from him. And as I said, once again, it's not like he didn't know the answer. He knew exactly what he needed to do because he's a devotee from birth. But he inquired from Sukadeva Goswami. That's the Vedic culture. That's the etiquette. That's the protocol. You inquire from a person of superior knowledge and realization. And that's how transcendental knowledge is transmitted in fourth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, the very famous verse, Krishna says, Tadvidi paripatena paripashnena sevaya upadekshanti te jnanam jnaninas tatvadarshana. That try to learn the truth by approaching a bona fide spiritual master, inquire submissively, and render service. In this case, his service is asking these questions as well. And here's the line I was really wanted to refer to, that upadekshanti te jnanam jnaninas tatvadarshana. The self-realized soul can impart knowledge unto you, because he has seen the truth. So something special happens. You know, when you take the humble position, when you're a qualified sishya, disciple, and you take the humble position and you inquire submissively and render service to a self-realized soul, and when you get that instruction, then you're able to assimilate it. You know, along with that instruction comes blessings from within, you know, from Krishna, from within, blesses you to be able to appreciate what you're being told and be inspired by it and understand it. And that's explained in the 10th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna says, Tesham sata de yuktanam bhajatam pratipurvakam dadami buddhiyogam tam yenamam upiyanti te. And the next verse, Tesham eva anukampartam aham agyanajam tamaha nasyami atmabhavishto jnana dipena bhashvata. That Krishna says, to those who are constantly devoted and worship me with love, I give them the intelligence by which they can come to me. Out of compassion for them, I, who am dwelling within their heart, destroy with the shining lamp of knowledge the darkness born of ignorance. So the two things are working in conjunction. See, when a person, a candidate for spiritual realization, has the right attitude and adopts the right course of action, humbly approaching the bona fide spiritual master, inquiring submissively, rendering like that, then when he's instructed by the spiritual master, Supersoul within his heart allows, well, Supersoul, first of all, Supersoul within the heart of that self-realized soul gives him exactly the right things to say, you know, to help that person. And then Supersoul within the heart of that candidate allows that person to appreciate it, understand it, and become enlightened by those instructions. So that's what's going on here. Between Sukadev Goswami and Maharaj Prickett, and you know, of course, he's very fortunate to be in that situation, and that's probably the main lesson that we can, you know, learn from this verse. That we have to try to follow on the footsteps of Maharaj Prickett here, and be humble. Inquire, to take direction from personalities who are more advanced than us in spiritual life, and then be prepared to practically apply those instructions in our life. And actually, could somebody grab the Bhagavad Gita for me? I just prefer to read some. I want to read a couple sentences there, but I'd like to do it. I could do it by memory, most likely, but I prefer to just read it right out. So in the 18th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, text 40, in this section, Krishna is talking about happiness and the different modes of material nature. So in his purport, Srila Prabhupada gives further insight into what Krishna is saying. And he makes the point, it's actually 1837. so it's in Srila Prabhupada's purport, he says, referring to the instructions of the spiritual master, he says, all these procedures are very difficult, bitter like poison. But if one is successful in following the regulations and comes to the transcendental position, he begins to drink real nectar and he enjoys life. So this is the program. Just paraphrasing what Prabhupada's saying here, you know, he says, in the pursuit of self-realization, one has to follow many rules and regulations. Well, those rules and regulations are, of course, ultimately they're injunctions, shastric injunctions, but they come to us in the form of instructions from our spiritual master. And the purpose of those, as Prabhupada says, is to control the mind and senses and concentrate the mind on the self. And as he says, so all these procedures are very difficult. Some might seem difficult to follow the instructions of the spiritual master. Bitter like poison, Prabhupada says, but, and here's the thing, but if somebody's successful in doing that, if we're successful, in other words, if we're determined, if we're really, you know, how would you say it, you know, really apply ourselves and really make that effort to follow the regulations or the instructions of the spiritual master, then here's the result. One comes to the transcendental position and begins to drink real nectar and enjoy life. So it's not like it's just, well, you got to do this. And no, there's something in it for us. there's something in it for us if we, you know, seriously and sincerely follow the instructions of the spiritual master. This is what we're, at least myself, I know if I were to analyze myself and be honest in my mentality, this is my motivation. I mean, ultimately and ideally, I'd like to be, you know, have the same motivation as the gopis, in that I just love Krishna and I just want to please Krishna and I don't want to see Krishna be, you know, hurt his feet when he's walking in the pasture. But I'm not there. You know, where I'm at is thinking like this. I'm thinking, yeah, I just have to, let me seriously follow the instructions of Prabhupada, the spiritual master, in hopes that as a result of doing that, I'll be promoted, I'll be elevated to the transcendental platform, I'll begin to drink real nectar and enjoy life. I mean, ultimately that, you know, that doesn't end there. That's not the ultimate goal. As I said, this is describing happiness in the mode of goodness, and you have to go on from there. But this is a good, starting point for a serious devotee to understand that, you know, there's something beyond happiness in the mode of passion. Happiness in the mode of passion is described in the next verse by Krishna. He talks about that happiness which is derived from contact of the senses with their objects and which appears like nectar at first, but poison at the end. That's in the Prabhupada says, Krishna says that's in the nature of passion. And then once again, at the end of Prabhupada's purport, he says, happiness derived from a combination of the senses and the sense objects is always a cause of distress and should be avoided by all means. That means whatever you got to do, avoid it. Right? That's what that expression means. Avoided by all means. That's how undesirable it is. It's something that will further entangle us in the modes of material nature and contribute to our staying, you know, in the cycle of birth and death that much longer. So devotees are fortunate. They've by Krishna's mercy, we've been given enough intelligence to understand that, no. Because everybody wants to be happy. Every living entity on the face of the earth and on below the surface of the earth and above the surface of the earth and all the planets throughout the whole material universe, they want to be happy. Every living entity. Ananda Maya Biasat, right? Everybody wants to be happy. And generally speaking, living entities are trying to be happy by what you just, that last description there, by the contact of the senses with their objects. That's the general, right? The program. Sense gratification. And Krishna is saying, sorry, that doesn't work. And devotees are very fortunate because we're very fortunate to even come and get this information, you know, to even intellectually or academically be presented with this information that sense gratification won't make us happy. And then being a devotee means developing that, cultivating that conviction that, yeah, this is true. I have to turn my back. You know, I have to turn my back on trying to be happy by engaging in sense gratification. But you can't turn your back. You can turn your back on that, but you can't turn your back on trying to be happy, on wanting to be happy, because that's like, you can't do it. It's the nature of the living entity. We want to be, Anandamaya Vyasat, once again, we want to be happy. So, where's that happiness going to come from? Well, Krishna, in the first verse I read, that's the description. That happiness in the mode of goodness is the happiness that we can experience by following these rules and regulations, you know, the Shastric injunctions, which come to us in the form of the instructions of the spiritual master, and which will maybe doing that may not. It almost seems counterintuitive because initially, I think as Archita mentioned in a class he gave recently, it's difficult at first. It can be. You seem like I'm doing this to be happy, but I'm becoming unhappy. I'm feeling like, you know, uncomfortable doing this, or it's difficult. But Krishna acknowledges that might be what happens in the beginning. He says it might be just like poison in the beginning, but in the end it's just like nectar. And it will awaken us to self-realization. And when we awaken to self-realization as a result of following these regulations, the instructions of the spiritual master, then as Prabhupada says in the end of that purport, we begin to drink real nectar and enjoy life. So that's what we're... You know, that's our program. That's what we're all about. And for us, we have to, you know, following in the footsteps of Maharaj Prickett for us translates, in my mind, to that, to just making that decision. It's a decision, you know, that I'm going to take, you know, seriously try to follow Prabhupada's instructions, so the instructions of my spiritual master, and try to become happy as a... a spiritually realized person, not as a materialist. You know, that's a really important big step forward for anybody. Now, one point, an example Prabhupada used to give, just to emphasize the importance of this, not trying to be your own guru, so to speak. He made the point, it's a mundane example, but he'd say physicians, doctors, when they're sick, they don't try to diagnose and prescribe treatment for themselves. They go to another doctor. See, so in the same way, you know, we have to, it requires humility, because, you know, the tendency in the material world is to think that, okay, you know, I could figure this one out. I think I could. I'll work this out. You know, and no, better to consult somebody and take guidance. You know, here's a great example. Maharaj Prakriti, he was the emperor. And not only that, as I mentioned, we heard he was a great devotee from birth. But he wasn't thinking like that. He didn't think, okay, I think I can handle this. So this is bad news, but I'll figure it out. You know, I'm the emperor. I'm a great devotee from birth. I don't need to ask anybody's advice what to do in this. No, he wanted advice. He welcomed it. And we've heard different things he said up to, you know, just prior to this verse, how humbly he presented himself to these great personalities when they were appearing on the scene there. So, yeah, we have to, you know, be like that. We should understand, if we're not following the instructions of our spiritual master, if we're not following the instructions of, you know, the Shastric injunctions, that means we think we know better. There's no other analysis, as far as I can see. Either we're following, and then if we're following, that's an indication that we actually have a humble mentality. But if we're not following, that means we think we know better. We think we know better than you know, our spiritual master, Prabhupada, and Krishna, ultimately. See? So this is, I think, a really significant point here that, you know, take-home instruction from this verse in particular and from this section of the Bhagavatam that, you know, be humble. Just in the material world, they have that expression, pride cometh before a fall. Right? Everybody's heard that. And, of course, the what would be called the opposite of that, it holds true too, that humility comes before a rise. In other words, you know, before you're going to go up, you got to be humble. You know, acknowledge that maybe I don't know perfectly how to, you know, what to do in this situation, and you know, maybe other people do have some intelligence as well, and they could help me. Yeah. So, yeah, I have a bunch of other things here, but that was really the main and most important thing I wanted to say. Probably I can make one other point that, as I mentioned, that Maharaj Prakriti already knew the answer to this question, being a great devotee and like that, and we do too. We should as well, because this is not the first time that this is coming up even in the Bhagavatam. Earlier on in the first and second chapters, the same kind of thing was gone over between sages of Naimisharanya and Suta Goswami. The sages of Naimisharanya inquired from Suta Goswami. If I can find it very quickly here. Way back in chapter 1. There's a bunch of verses leading up to this and after it, but this is the gist of it. They inquired him. They said, please, therefore, being blessed with many years, explain to us in an easily understandable way what you have ascertained to be the absolute and ultimate good for the people in general. So same sort of thing. You know, same sort of inquiry is there from the sages of Naimisharanya to Suta Goswami, and the same sort of answer is there. You know, actually, this is a couple of verses that pretty much parallel, very closely parallel, if not, you know, what Sukadeva Goswami answers Maharaj Prakriti and how Suta Goswami responds to the sages of Naimisharanya. You know, and they both congratulated the person for asking the question. You know, Suta Goswami says to the sages of Naimisharanya, he says, Munaya Sarupristoham Bhavadvir Lokamangalam Yat Krishna Krishna Samprasno Yenat Masu Prasidati. He congratulated them. He says, your questions are very good. They're glorious and are relevant to the world's welfare because they relate to Lord Krishna. Only questions of this sort can completely satisfy the self And then he goes on to give him the instruction, Tasmade Kanamanaso Bhagavan Satvatam Pati Shrotavya Kutitavyasya Jaya Nicha Jaya Puja Chanichada, that basically you should hear and chant and remember Krishna at all times and all places and all circumstances. So, and that same instructions, those same two instructions, we're going to hear them, Sukadeva Goswami giving those to Maharaj Prigat in the upcoming days, you know, that follow. So, but repetition is not a fault in the Vedic literature, because it's just helping us focus more on the, you know, pretty much the one and only important thing that we have to do in this lifetime, which is try to become fully absorbed in Krishna. You know, it's not the Bhagavatam and Vedic literature and culture in general is not meant to give people a whole bunch of information that, you know, kind of interests your mind and entertains you and leaves you with no value. No, it's meant to help people focus on exactly what it is that they have to do to perfect their life and, you know, and keep them on track. You know, what's that? There's that verse in the, I think it's the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, from wherever and whatever the mind wanders due to its flickering and unsteady nature, one has to withdraw it and bring it back under the control of the self. So that's what the repetition's for. You know, the repetition and throughout the shastras is to help us do that. You know, to just focus and, you know, stay on track. Remember Krishna. Always remember Krishna. Never forget Krishna. You know, so that we can become completely absorbed in the thought of Krishna and at the end of this life, get out of the cycle of birth and death, go back home, back to Godhead. So does anybody have any questions or comments? I can't see the time. Can anybody? What time is it? Beautiful. Okay, that's good. Yep. All right.
Well, thank you very much for a very insightful and helpful class, giving some very important pointers on relationship with the spiritual master, and King Pariksit, how he's being helpful to all those who are in his audience. So you had mentioned at the very beginning that why should King Pariksit ask questions which he himself knows the answer to, since he was already an enlightened soul and self-realized. But we all have to remember that he doesn't ask these questions for himself. He has a whole audience of hundreds of saints and sages who may be there, and they may not know all these answers. Many of them may, and some of them may not. The important thing is that everyone should hear from Shukdeva Goswami, receive that information, and hopefully memorize that information, and when they go back to where they had come from, they will spread that information where they go. So in other words, Maharaj Pariksit is not only asking for himself, but he's also, as a king, he's always thinking of others. He's thinking of what others need and how others will be helped. And so that's his, in my understanding, his chief reason for asking, in fact, all of these different questions, which we know, I mean, after all, he was the grandson of Arjuna, grandson of Bhima, grandson of Dhammaraj or Yudhisthira. He wasn't sitting with his fingers in his ears. They were giving him guidance and instruction and direction throughout the growing up period. So as we have known, he is a God-realized soul. But the glory of his God-realization is that he's not only thinking of himself, but he's thinking of others who will then help others, and it will spread far and wide, just like our Srila Prabhupada has done.
Yeah, thank you. Nice comment. Anybody else? Yeah. Ravindranath?
Yeah, you mentioned how by hearing from the spiritual master, the super soul within the heart blesses one. So what does that blessing consist of?
Yeah, repeat the question.
So you were mentioning how by hearing like the instructions of the spiritual master, the super soul within the heart gives one blessings. So what are those blessings?
Well, Sarvasya Chahamriti Sanavishto Mitak Smriti Gyanam Aponam. So Krishna says, I am seating within the heart, and from me comes knowledge, remembrance, and forgetfulness. So, you know, Krishna sometimes referred to Dhyampati, the Lord of the Intelligence. Whatever anybody's understanding or not understanding, it's ultimately depending upon the Supersoul. So, in other words, for somebody, if a devotee's sincere, submissive like that, and doing, you know, going about the whole thing in the right way, then Krishna allows that person, you know, for Krishna from within his heart, he allows him to understand the philosophy and, you know, think it's, well, this is important, let me take this seriously, and he gets inspiration from hearing it and acting upon it. That's the blessing. That's my understanding. Oh, okay. That gentleman over there. Our guest. Yeah, the guest. I stopped early, so we got time for everybody. Yeah.
Hare Krishna. At the beginning, you mentioned that Parikshit Maharaj was having a humble position when he was asking the question. What is specifically being humble? Now, the traditional view of being humble is someone that doesn't raise his voice, does not object, doesn't get angry. But we see that in Prabhupada's Leela and also Srila Bhaktisiddhanta, they did not follow this view of being humble. Sometimes they were very assertive and aggressive. What does it mean being humble for us?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, of course, there's the conventional stereotype understanding of being humble, but for devotees, perhaps the most important aspect of humility to always remember is you're humble when you're following the instructions of your spiritual master. That's, you know, that's humility. If you're not following, you might be like that, you know, but if you're not following the instructions of your spiritual master, then you're not being humble. That means you think you know better than your spiritual master. That's not humility. So I would say if I had to focus on one aspect of, you know, what it means to be humble, I would focus in on that. That somebody who's following the instructions of their spiritual master, they're humble. Somebody who's not, externally, they may be behaving in a very, you know, kind of not submissive way. That they not, you're not humble. If you're not, that would be my, what I would say would be the most important criteria if I had to focus on one thing. Hope that. Thank you. Maharaj, has a comment?
Thank you. I'd like to touch on the question that the, I don't know your name, but it's a very useful question. Humility, yes, it's not something external, as many people think. You bow down, or you show reverence to someone, or it can be all those things, but the most important thing, what is the inner feeling of the person who is humble? He feels that Krishna is supreme, Krishna is the greatest, and he himself is small, insignificant, and has really no power whatsoever outside of what Krishna graces him with. So therefore, his feeling is one of smallness, and yet at the same time, he recognizes that the greatest, the best, the highest, comes from Krishna himself. Therefore, it is the feeling that Krishna is tremendous, is wonderful, is glorious, and as far as I'm concerned, I'm nothing except what Krishna gives me. And if he gives me something which makes me look glorious and powerful and great, I give the credit to Krishna, because as far as I'm concerned, next to Krishna, I am nothing. To me, this is what humility is.
Thank you. Another question? Yeah, Martha.
Question is, you said that you experience like poison when you're taking in the nectar of like Krishna consciousness. Is that because of the bad karma ripening that's like needs to be purified?
Well, initially, and nobody generally, people don't start the process of devotional service as pure devotees. Okay, you start, you're conditioned by the modes of passion and ignorance. So to follow the different rules and regulations, like for instance, rising early, coming to Mangalarti, chanting 16 rounds. That discipline, for somebody whose mind is very strongly conditioned by the modes of passion and ignorance, that might not be very appealing at first. That's like poison. It's you don't want to do it. It's uncomfortable. It's kind of like you really got to force yourself to do it initially. But then as you get purified, you know, by the process, you get purified, then you start enjoying it. You actually look forward to getting up the next morning and chanting your rounds and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that's kind of what that section means there. Somebody else had a question? Sarva? Yeah.
Sages of Namasharanya. And then also Sukadeva Goswami was talking with Maharaj Parikit. But isn't Sutta Goswami, didn't he repeating? But chronologically it comes earlier in the book.
Correct. Yeah. We're hearing the Bhagavatam that's correct. Exactly correct. It's chronologically it's kind of mixed around there.
Apparently, so chronology is less important than the actual spiritual message.
When you read the whole thing, it all makes sense. But I don't want to get into the details now. I'm just going to end this class by reading something. It's an instruction from Prabhupada. And here, 1968, here in Los Angeles, a devotee asked Prabhupada this question. What should you be thinking about when you're chanting? What do you think about when you're chanting? That's a good question, isn't it? What do you think about when you're chanting? Because we're all chanting. What are we supposed to be thinking about when we're chanting? Well, I'm just going to read you the answer. I'm not going to open it up for discussion. Prabhupada says, chanting? You simply hear. When you say Hare Krishna, you try to hear the very sound, Hare Krishna. That's all. Nothing more. This is meditation. Your tongue and your ear should be engaged in sounding this transcendental vibration, Hare Krishna. Best meditation. This is also accepted in Bhagavad Gita, the best meditation. You don't keep your mind elsewhere. You keep your mind on the chanting, Hare Krishna, and here. So this is responsive. When I was chanting, you were hearing. When you were chanting, I was hearing. So it is exchange. I hear your chanting, you hear my chanting. This is the process. There is no possibility of thinking of anything else. Best and easiest type of meditation. You at once become on the transcendental plane, goes on. But your response, hearing that, you might think, well, I know that. Yeah, I know you know that. But it's good to be reminded of it because, you know, it's like, Krishna said in the Bhagavad Gita, from wherever the mind wanders, due to its flickering and unsteady nature, we have to withdraw. So I just heard that the other day. I was listening to a bunch of lectures and I heard that and I thought, wow, this is, you know, you need to be reminded of this, just because sometimes when we're chanting, we might be thinking of this, that, and the other thing, but this is what we're supposed to be. When we're chanting, we're just supposed to be hearing the chanting, and that's it. That's what we're thinking about when we're chanting. Okay, Gantra Chumad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
Yeah, higher.
why we're always trying to get people to get a shot and try to
smell the beer.
Yes.
Yeah.
People are hired to because as I mentioned in class, I'm the mild be a son, but the nature of living in it is always happy to have the pleasure. You just tell people, you know, stop, I'm not trying to make money. Superior way of being happier.
Right.
So they won't commit for a while. You mentioned the person may be restricted from sense enjoyment.
Yeah.
You see? You could restrict somebody from sense enjoyment.
But
the taste will remain. The desire for happiness will remain.
Right.
It's just a matter of time. Unless you give them a superior, program to become happy.
Right.
Like what we described in the 23rd chapter, then they're going to go back to that.
Right. So, like, let's say you are in the material world and you need to have a car and a house. And could you offer these things to Krishna?
Yes.
So is that like a practice that you offer the pleasures you experience to Krishna?
You use them in the Krishna service.
In